Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here.
We're both wearing white shirts today. I love it. White polos. We're looking good, Tate.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, Blue Angels are flying outside my window right now.
Oh, is it Seafair?
It's Seafair weekend. I'm going out on the boat this weekend. I've got a friend and a listener of the show who flies for American Airlines.
Incredible.
I flew Air Wisconsin with. He's coming out. We're taking the boat out on Sunday. And we are watching the Blue Angels hit the deck. And I'm excited. This is my favorite weekend of the year where I get to hear very loud jet planes for 3 days straight. And they get to practice too. So it's like really a bonus day today. Flying the Cirrus tonight, going up to after the NOTAMs and the runway closures and the TFRs go away, flying up to...
Make sure you interfere with the Blue Angels show. That'll go over real well.
Yeah. Going up to Orcas Island for some dinner. Excited for that.
You have a better weekend than me. I'm headed down to Phoenix to look at a sweetheart of a multifamily deal.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Get some discounts. Good. Well, hey, speaking of multifamily and buying things, we have talked about on the show four different ways to leverage and amplify your portfolio. Actually, probably about 15 different ways. But one of the ways is where you can get cash, right? Where you can shore up cash. HELOC, life insurance loan, leverage stock brokerage account link, and borrowing from your 401k. I'm not going to go into each one of those things, but then you can do that. And then you can further amplify your returns by doing something super tax efficient, which is what we're helping airline pilots do. You know, I mentioned in the show today that there was a pilot at the Houston happy hour that was like, hey, look it, I saved $100,000 of my taxes by listening to what you guys talk about. And I'm like, cool.
That's right.
Now, we're not giving any tax, legal, or investment advice. So make sure you run everything you do by Hall CPAs if you're using them as a CPA firm. But I'm excited to bring back Rod from Money Insights. We're going to bring him back onto the show, who's going to talk about life insurance. And before you all go to sleep, this is really exciting. Like having, I mean, I know at the airlines, we all have our term life insurance and you might be checked out already and you go, oh, I already got life insurance. I don't need that. But you really want to hear about this strategy. I think it's very powerful. And in fact, most pilots I talk to every day about investing say, I'm actually leveraging my life insurance cash value to invest in your deal. And then we kind of get into the semantics of it. And it's a really great way to not only have a great cash value, but return and all these things. So Tate, I know you're dying to jump in.
No, yeah. I mean, it's Rod Zabriskie. He's one of the principals at Money Insights Group. They are fantastic. You know, I say at the end of the show, we love how pragmatic they are. This can be very confusing when you first start learning about it. It can seem like it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of fees. But once you understand the concept, I see this all the time where light bulb goes off and somebody goes, oh, I get it. Okay. So we've talked about this. This will be the fifth episode that we've ever done on this podcast about this topic. So this is something, you know, we're serious about. Ryan and I are putting our money where our mouths are. This is a strategy that we use in our own financial lives. And it's not the end all be all, but it's a quiver. It's an arrow in your quiver, right? It's something that I believe is a very effective weapon to have. Part of, you know, cash to draw on to make investments.
And there's a reason why we brought Rod on over four times now.
Yeah.
And that's because this is a confusing topic, but it's one we really want you to know about. And think of this as like getting your private pilot's license, right? You haven't really learned how to fly yet. You got your ticket and the ink's drying, but now it's time to go out and learn. Think about this episode as getting your private pilot's license and then schedule a call with Rod and really go learn and get the experience for your particular situation.
Right.
Because that'll help you. He'll get a bunch of information from you and kind of your situation, and then he'll kind of help you lay out a strategy and then expect to do like a follow-up call, really walk through it. And Rod is a great guy for that. And we specifically bring him on because he's not salesy. He's not trying to hype this up or confuse people. He really just wants you to go in eyes wide open, which I and Tate, you know, we really appreciate that.
Well, without further ado, let's get to the education.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Rod, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Glad to be back.
Always a pleasure.
Rod, we've had you on the show many times to talk about whole life insurance investing and the benefits to pilots. I mean, pilots are thinking about lots of things like borrowing against a HELOC or borrowing against their 401k or where to invest their money, long-term family planning for life insurance coverage. And we all get term life insurance through our respective airlines. Can you just, for those that have never heard you come on the show, can you just kind of talk about the difference between maybe whole life insurance, which what you're talking about today, and maybe what term is at the most basic level?
Yeah, for sure. And quite frankly, people are usually shocked when we say, hey, we're using life insurance strategically to build wealth. And they're like, well, wait a minute, isn't life insurance just like if I die, my family gets money? Do I have to die to build wealth? And the answer is no. So term insurance, that's really all it is. You're buying the insurance. You want your family or your business partners or whoever else is relying on you from a financial standpoint to be taken care of if something ever happens to you. So you pay a premium. Most people just pay a monthly premium that covers the million or 5 million or 10 million of insurance that you need in place if something happens to you. It's pretty basic. So and you're also picking a 10-year, 20-year, 30-year time frame for however long you feel like you're going to need that insurance.
And Rod, everybody who's listening to this show is mostly airline pilots. And so like everybody already has that usually,
right? Yeah.
You know, I think every airline pretty much gives us term insurance just for being an employee. Yep. And what's cool is we don't even have to pay that premium that you talked about. We pretty much get the death benefit of a year's salary or so, maybe more. I don't know what it is today, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it's like $1 million, I think, from last time, or maybe it's 3 years of captain's pay on the biggest equipment. But let's talk about this whole life insurance and how you really can build wealth from it.
Yeah. So when we then move to whole life, or categorically, it's called cash value life insurance or permanent life insurance. Now we're getting into a situation where it's not insurance that I'm only needing for the next 10 years, 20 years. It's also not only about the actual death benefit or the insurance benefit itself. It comes with that, and that's great. But especially in the context when we talk about using it as a strategic tool to build wealth, we're talking about using the life insurance policy in conjunction with the other things that you're doing. And what we're talking about is using what we call the living benefits, right? So yes, the death benefit is there if something happens to me, but it also carries what's called a cash value that grows on a very consistent basis. And I can leverage that, loan against it, and use that money to go do other things. So when you combine those attributes, now it sets it apart from anything else out there. There's nothing else that I can do where I can create the same kind of characteristics as I can when I use a whole life policy in that way. And if you're hearing this for the first time and this is new to you, don't be surprised, don't be shocked. Or if you've heard that whole life is horrible, like, you know, the Dave Ramseys of the world say, you know, stay away from it. Well, what we're talking about here is very different than a plain vanilla kind of just whole life policy that was set up to be the investment. I'm not trying to make the whole life insurance the investment itself.
Right.
I'm using the whole life policy in conjunction with my investments to improve my returns.
So, Rod, you've been on the show 3 times now. This is number 4. We appreciate having you back. Obviously, this is something that Ryan and I are super interested in and implementing in our own financial lives. If you haven't heard Rod speak on the podcast before, we have a lot of new listeners that may be unfamiliar with this topic. Go back. We've got episode 47, episode 70, and 84. So 47, 70, and 84. We've had you guys on talking about all the nuts and bolts of how these policies work, the difference between index universal life versus whole, the difference between term and whole. And one of the key takeaways that I love from our previous conversations is that right there. The whole life policy is not the investment. And if you're just going to stuff money into this thing and you're never going to borrow against it, then there are way better things to put your money into, right? The whole idea is to use it as a vehicle to stuff money into, borrow against it, and flywheel that cash in and out of the policy. So today, we want to talk about different vehicles that you can put cash into that then you can borrow against and use to invest in other things. That's the key. So we were talking before the show about a number of categories that you can borrow against. The first one being your 401k. We've done an episode on that. I don't have the episode number off the top of my head, but we've done an episode, Ryan and I, talking about the pros and cons of borrowing against your 401k. You can have a securities-backed line of credit or a taxable brokerage account that you can borrow against the cash balance, what you hear you know, billionaires doing. It's why they never pay capital gains taxes, because they don't sell their stock. They just borrow against it. And then you have a whole life insurance policy. And then, of course, you have a HELOC where you can borrow against your real estate. So we're going to break down the pros and cons of each one of these so that people can really understand the differences or the similarities of borrowing against a life insurance policy. So before we get into that, Rod, can you, for somebody who hasn't listened to episodes 47, 70, and 84, give us a 5-minute breakdown of how these policies work and why they're so lucrative over many decades of using them?
So essentially what's happening in this case is, and really in all cases, is you have an asset, right? Whether it be the life insurance policy, the securities account, the property, you have an asset, you're loaning against that, using that loaned money to go out and do something else with it, right? Go out and invest is kind of the key to your audience. So with the cash value type of life insurance policy, we're building it with minimum cost so we can get as much of our money going into the cash value as possible. And what the cash value is that's the asset, right? That's the money that's sitting in my account. That's the asset that I'm going to loan against to go out and do the other things.
If you don't mind, I'm going to politely interrupt as we go, just because I hear all this stuff and I'm like, whew, right? Like this is all for someone new. I know they would be like, what are you talking about? So when he says asset, what you mean, Rod, I think is you put money into a whole life plan, right? Just you're going to put $100,000, let's say, or $500,000 you're going to fund a life insurance policy called a whole life plan. And what we're talking about is not just putting it in there and just letting it sit. That's what the people of, you know, Dave Ramsey's and things like that are going to say. That's a terrible investment because it's just sitting in a life insurance policy. There's a better way to get life insurance, right, through term or something like that. Then what you're saying is you're going to borrow or you're going to get cash value from that investment, meaning that a portion of that $100,000, and we'll get into these details in another episode or this one, a portion of that $100,000, then you can actually take back from your plan. That's called the cash value. It's liquid. It's money you can have and take and invest somewhere else that would then multiply your investment. So I just want to, am I good? Am I tracking? I just want to put this in like layman's terms.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I always like, you know, mentioning that term life insurance is you're renting the policy. And when that 10 years or 20 years is up, you've paid that cash on a monthly basis or whatever it is, and then it ends and you're done and you don't get that cash back. There's no value to it, right? You're renting the policy. Whereas whole life, you own it and it is an asset. It is a cash asset that grows in value over time.
Yeah. So for example, I'm 41 and if I need life insurance for a term of my life, right? And then I won't need it anymore, because now I'm in retirement and my kids can use that if I pass away. So I might need term until 60 years old and then my kids' college are paid for and they're out of the house and everything's good. If I pass, that'll be tragic, but I don't necessarily need a cash value. So it's a term of your life and then that goes away. Whole goes forever and ever with you, right? And it's something you can invest in every year and then it still has that death benefit, but it's just not as, maybe it's not as lucrative as the term, or is it? We can talk about that. It'll grow right over time. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be the irony of what we're doing here, is because we're intentionally reducing the amount of insurance on the policy. Cause like I said a minute ago, we want to reduce the cost, and that's where the costs are based off of, is however much insurance I'm having on it. So I want to have as little as possible. So in someone hearing that, they might be, well, why don't I just put it to $1 of insurance then? Right.
Right.
Okay. So there are tax benefits that we get on this. And the IRS, as in all cases, they set the rules, right? In order to get the tax benefits, you have to do certain things to qualify. They have a definition of life insurance. And so I need to have a certain amount of insurance on the policy relative to the amount I'm putting in. If I'm putting $100,000 in and I'm 41 years old, I might need whatever, $1.5 million of insurance on the policy to qualify within their definition to now get the tax benefits. So that's how we decide how much insurance we need, but we're not putting any more than that, right? That's kind of that threshold. And so again, does it provide insurance? Yes. Do I, or do a lot of our clients also have term insurance in addition to the whole life? Absolutely. Right. Because I want my whole life policy to be lean, mean, efficient for what I'm doing with the cash value. And so I have term insurance on top of it.
There we go. Okay. So let's move on. If your head is spinning and you're like, hey, I want to understand more of the fundamentals, go back episode 47, episode 70, episode 84, check them out. So today we really do want to get into talking about borrowing against it, because that's the whole idea. And really, when you get away from the Dave Ramsey style of thinking, that's where your mind is going everywhere. You're going, okay, what lazy equity can I pull from? Do I have a home that has $500,000 or $1 million worth of equity that's just sitting there doing nothing? And if I can borrow against it at, let's say, 5.5%, 6%, and I can go put it in a private credit fund that's making 10.5% or 11%, you're making a great interest arbitrage there. Now, you don't want to go and gamble with it or buy a Lamborghini necessarily, but if you can make, you know, relatively safe investments on borrowed money, this is how the rich get rich. I mean, this is how wealth is built, is through leverage. So let's talk through first what maybe an S block, right? Because one of the biggest things I always hear is, you know, you could do the exact same thing with a securities-backed line of credit. You put that $100,000 or $500,000 into a taxable brokerage account, and you get a line of credit on it. Okay, you've got a $500,000 taxable brokerage account. You go to the bank and you say, hey, I want to take a loan using my stocks as collateral. So, Rod, you want to talk us through that and some of the pros and cons of that structure?
Yeah. So the nice thing on both sides is your money stays where it is and continues to do its thing, right? We're just leveraging against it. So in the case of the life insurance policy, it's growing very consistently. Long term, we're going to create about a 5% tax-free return, whether you loan against it or not. That's going to happen, right? If you do loan against it, again, your money stays there and continues to do its thing. You're using that loaned money to go out and invest, right? So same thing on the securities-backed line of credit. The bank is giving you the loan using what's in that securities account as the collateral, and it stays there and continues to do what it's going to do, right?
Right.
Probably the biggest difference is whole life being what it is and the way it grows. When I go and take a loan, the lender is going to give me up to about 95% of what I have in my cash value, right? That's the kind of loan to value amount that they're willing to do. When now you move over to the securities side, it obviously depends on how I'm investing. But really, regardless, if I'm investing in stocks of any kind, even if it's blue chip stocks, they're really only going to give me maybe 60% loan to value, because there's variability on the investment, right? They have to account for that going in.
And if the investments go down, guess what? You get a margin call and you got to come up with that cash.
Yes.
So that's a risk. Sorry, you were probably about to say that, Rod, but yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because we've seen it happen, right? Mm-hmm. So they're never going to want to go higher than that 60% level. And so you get the call.
For anybody that's not familiar with what a margin call is, what does that look like? And what happens if you don't have the cash to come up with the margin call? So let's say you have a $100,000 stock account. The bank says, we'll give you $60,000 as a loan against that $100,000 account value. And let's say the stock market experiences a large dip and your $100,000 worth of securities that are in that account goes down to $50,000. Now, the bank is naked on $10,000, right? And so they go, whoa, we don't want to have an outstanding loan that your collateral isn't enough to cover. So they say, hey, we need $10,000 from you right now to cover that, right? So what happens if you say, sorry, I don't have it?
Well, you've collateralized those securities. So they're literally going to force you to sell those securities and
at a loss
and make them whole with the 50 that they have, right? But you're still on the hook for the other 10, right?
Right. Yeah.
You're in a bad situation. You've liquidated the account and come up with that, right? But that's also why they're continually pushing at that 60% level, because it was at 100, but then when it went to 80, right? You lost 20%. It went to 80,000 value. They're going to say, we're no longer comfortable with you having 60. We need you only get 48, right? So they're going to be calling it as they go. You need to either, again, we're assuming that you tapped out the full, you know, 60,000 that you were able to get your hands on, but they're going to say you need to pay 12 grand right now,
right?
Or else we're going to start liquidating the asset.
So that is not to say that you shouldn't go do a S block. It's a fantastic vehicle, but those are the risks, and that's something you need to be aware of.
What is an S block? You guys are saying this S block thing.
Securities backed line of credit. Sorry.
Oh, got it.
S block. Right.
Okay.
So how does that compare to whole life? Because whole life, you can't get margin called, right?
Well, so you have, again, let's say the same thing, $100,000 sitting there. They're going to make available to you $95,000 as a loan, and you're going to be charged interest on it, right? But the $100,000 you have sitting there, it's going to grow on a guaranteed basis. When we go in, there are some kind of differences depending on the company, the product, you know, so we're not going to get into too much detail on this, but the fact is that $100,000 sitting there is going to grow either way, whether I loan against it or not. There are guaranteed interest rates. There are dividends that the companies will pay and have paid for, you know, 150 plus years. So that's the biggest thing to me that I like about the whole life policy is that it's so just consistent and predictable in what it's going to do that I don't have question marks as to what's going to happen, what could happen out there that would drive my value down, because it's not. It's just going to grow and do its thing.
I'd love to crack the code on this. So you said it's going to grow no matter what.
Yeah.
I want to walk through an example. And I know there's a million different policies and plan providers, and we're not giving any specific financial advice. We're just talking generically. We're having a friendly conversation about some things and how this works, right? I put $100,000 in to a whole life plan. I do absolutely nothing to Dave Ramsey's demise. I do absolutely nothing. I just completely leave it in there. What does it do? What does my $100,000 do every year? What can I sort of expect? Is it growing at like 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8%? What is it doing?
Yeah.
For the growth of the value.
Sure. So if we're talking about it beginning at the contribution level, there are some costs that are kind of built into the plan, and they're a little bit front end loaded.
Because there's insurance. That's what people sometimes forget. There's an insurance component. You have a death benefit. So of course there's cost to the insurance. And it takes a few years to clear that hurdle to where it's got tailwinds rather than headwinds.
Yep. And I think of it like, you know, starting a business and having a startup costs or something like that, right? I know there's a result I want to get to. I need to take on some cost up front, realizing that over time I'm going to overcome those costs and get to a much better place. And so it's worth it to me to do that. But I need to understand that going in, right? So in year one, first 100,000, you know, I put in, there's about a 20% load in that first year. So of that 100,000, about 80 of that's going to land in the cash value. Year two, it's about 90%. By year three, the costs have come down quite a bit. It's basically 100 plus.
On that original 100 or additional funding that you put in there?
Yeah, I'm talking about additional funding. So if in year two, I put another 100 in.
Additional funding. So first year I put in 100, I got 80. Next year I put in 100, I got 90. Next year I put in 100 and it's 95. But let's talk about that original 80.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I just put 100 in, that original 80. What happens if I don't do anything with that 80? What return am I expecting in that whole life policy if I don't pull the cash from it, don't borrow from it?
There's a guaranteed interest rate tied to it. And this is true no matter company, product, whatever. Whole life has a guaranteed interest rate associated with it. Generally, it's going to be about 3%. It can vary between 2 up to 3.75%, but 3% is pretty standard. And then in addition to that, we use specific companies that also pay a dividend. They're called mutual life insurance companies. That just means when I get a policy, I become a part owner in the company. And so when they pay a dividend, I get a portion of it because I'm part owner, right?
It's kind of like a stock.
I mean, it's still privately held, so to speak, because it's owned by the policyholders. Okay. But with that ownership, when that dividend is paid out, then it comes to me instead of stockholders. If it was a stock company and they were paying a dividend, it would go to stockholders. In this case, it goes as a policyholder.
I'd like to take a moment for all the skeptics in the room that go, nothing's guaranteed in life. How can there be a guaranteed payment? These companies have been paying dividends for 150 years, some close to 200. So I'd like to talk about what they are investing in. And this kind of ties back to a self-storage deal that we currently have. Because one of the lenders on this self-storage deal is a life insurance company, right? So Ryan, you want to talk about your experiences working with life insurance companies lenders on, you know, very low LTV projects?
Yeah. So first of all, life insurance companies are going to go lend money to real estate investment shops, but they're going to go for the cream of the crop, the best deals, the most stable product, they're going to put stuff on stuff that they know is bulletproof. So like the Houston portfolio, we had a life insurance lender taking a swing at that because it's stabilized. It's not a deep value add. The PNW Trio deal we did back in May has a life insurance loan on it. And that is a very stable 96% occupied, Maine and Maine located class A institutional quality asset. And they're not going to over leverage, and they're going to want to see a lot of skin in the game generally from the operator, like a lot of, like, you know, their own commitment to the deal.
What's the leverage ratio on that?
Well, the Houston property is 49% LTV.
So let's just use that one. So if a life insurance company gave you that loan and for any reason you didn't pay back with interest, they would foreclose on it and they would double their money overnight rather than getting their 6%, right?
It's not that they would double their money. They would just have the equity that would realistically recall back the money that they've lent. Because if they're lending at 59%, let's say it's $100 million. Well, it is a $100 million deal. So if they've given us $50 million, let's say, for the deal, now they've got $50 million of equity that they're ahead of.
Right.
So the properties would have to crater in value by that much.
Right.
So these distributions potentially are coming from, you know, really safe, you know, lending on stuff like this. And these are not easy loans to get. They're very difficult. They only go with select borrowers and well-known operators. And so they're very safe lending. And again, I'm not speaking for the intricacies of how these distributions are guaranteed, or we're not making any projections here. We're just discussing, like, this is real life stuff where people, life insurance companies have lent us money. Tyler Longview portfolio was actually lent by a life co.
Rod, do you want to speak to some of the other investments that these life insurance companies go out and make in order to generate these guaranteed returns?
Yeah. And the nice thing is if they publish their, that's not a complete holdings, but for example, they'll publish the trades that they made over the last quarter. And so you can see as they're moving in and out of these types of deals. But I'll say this, 80%+, especially these mutual life insurance companies, 80%+ is in bonds, treasuries, high value corporate bonds, et cetera, and long-term type of stuff, right? So I'll give you an example. One of the companies that we do a lot of work with, they're currently paying 6%. When you combine the guaranteed interest plus the dividend, they're paying 6 right now in 2025. When you go back and look at the previous 20 years, the highest they paid was 6.34. The lowest they paid was 5.75. So all things considered, pretty narrow window.
Yeah, I want to stress over and over and over again. We're giving examples. We're not saying what you're going to get.
Yep.
I can't disclaimer that enough.
Yep.
But Rod, so let's get back to the 80K. So I put the 80K in. I don't do anything with it. I'm going to get this, you know, let's call it between 5 and 7%. Interest. Some of it's guaranteed, some of it's a dividend, so it's not guaranteed. So that's not super exciting. So we'll get to how we deal with that in a second. Let's talk about what death benefit I would get on that 80K generally, right? We're not guaranteeing anything here, but what would I generally get as a death benefit?
Yeah, your starting death benefit on, if you're 30 years old, it might be 2 million. If you're 40 years old, it might be, you know, 1.6. If you're 60 years old, it might be 1, something like that.
So I'm going to put 80K in one time, and I'm going to get a $1.6 million death benefit with a 5 to 6% guaranteed interest payment. I mean, well, 3%, I guess, is what you said.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
People who are familiar with term will be saying, like, that's ridiculous. I can get that same death benefit for, you know, $50 a month.
Yeah.
But that's not the idea, right? You're front loading this cash and the death benefit. We're trying to get the death benefit as small as possible by stuffing in as much cash as possible, right? It's the complete opposite.
Yeah. Well, and also the $50 a month, 100% of that goes to the insurance company.
Exactly.
On something that I might need during the term of my life. I hope I don't need. I'm giving them money in hope that I don't actually need a life insurance policy, right? So, you know, again, that could be completely for nothing. You could pay $50 a month for 30 years and never actually use it, right? In this case, you're putting in money that you can actually not only earn income on, but you can borrow against, and gives you that death benefit.
So getting back to the S block here, the securities-backed line of credit, the similarities would be the fact that you do not have to liquidate the underlying assets in order to take the loan.
Yeah,
moving to a 401k loan. This is something that we get asked about all the time. Ryan, Tate, what do you think? Is it a good idea to take a 401k loan? Totally depends on your personal situation. But if you go back all the way to episode 23, Ryan and I did an episode where we talked about the pros and cons. One of the cons is you have to liquidate the stock. So you're taking that cash out of your 401k. There's no tax hit. There's no penalty. You can take a $50,000 general purpose loan. It's actually scary how quick and easy it is, but you have to liquidate. So not a good idea to take a 401k loan when the stock market takes a huge dip. You know, if the stock market craters by 10-15%, that's not the day to go take a 50k loan out of your 401k, right? Because you are liquidating those assets in order to take that cash out of the policy. That is different to taking a loan from your life insurance policy, because the life insurance policy, you are paying an interest rate, and it's more like that securities-backed line of credit where I like to call it on temperature, right? The cash stays on temperature and it continues growing in the policy, and then you're paying an interest rate for borrowing the funds, right?
So yeah, making this breaking this down a little bit easier, the $80,000, if I borrow against it, let's say I take $60,000 from it, is the cash on temperature still $80,000 in the policy, or is it now $20,000?
Yep, the full $80,000 stays there, continues to grow.
Really? Wow.
So, but you are paying an interest rate. And unlike a 401k loan where you pay the interest to yourself, and that's a common misconception. People go, well, wait, I don't want to pay 8 or 9%. Like the interest rate's 9% right now to take a 401k loan. Well, that interest goes back to yourself. You pay that back into your policy. And there's actually, I mean, I can't speak to anybody else's company, but I've done this many times. There's no fees associated with it. It's literally just interest to yourself back into your 401k. On a life insurance loan, you are paying interest on that loan. Where does that interest go, Rod? And how does that compare to the growth rate?
Yeah. So the interest is going to be paid to the insurance company. So in most cases, people are just using the insurance company as the lender. And so that happens. You can set it up against a bank. There are banks out there that'll offer what's called a cash value line of credit. But again, whoever the lender is, you've taken the loan from them. The interest that you're paying on the loan goes to the lender.
And what's that interest rate today? Like today on, you know, July 31st, 2025, as we're recording this, what is the interest rate right now?
5.5%.
Ish. 5.5. Okay. Yeah. And is that benchmarked off of like the 5-year, or what's the...
Most of the companies are benchmarking off of a Moody's Corporate Bond Index. They'll take the average over the last, whatever, 12 months and call that. On January 1, that's what they announce and hold up for the year. Some companies will adjust more frequently, but...
So a 5.5% loan right now is not a bad loan. Pretty good. I mean, in this environment where when we go to a bank to borrow, we're paying 6 or 7%. 5.5% is not too bad. So, you know, this could be a strategy to buy a house potentially, or invest in a syndication, or invest in some kind of rental property, whatever it might be, right?
Sure.
So,
well, this is what we talked about on previous episodes, is using that as your bullet chamber, right? You know, everybody has a savings account, right, that they shovel extra money into until they've got that $50,000 saved up to invest in another LP investment, or saved up enough to invest in that rental property. Everybody has that capacitor, that savings account, that whatever account that you use to stuff money into until it gets up to a certain balance where you can then draw it down and go use it to invest in something. We've talked about using a life insurance policy in that same vein, where instead of using a checking account where you're not really, or even a savings account, most banks are only paying a few percentage points at best on savings. Instead, you can cycle it through your life insurance policy where it's really growing at a faster rate, and then you draw it down from there. You want to speak to that?
Yeah, for sure. So, and one of the really cool things that happens is, again, just use the $80,000. It was there. It was going to grow anyway. I can loan against it, take the $60,000 loan. The full $80,000 stays there and will continue to grow. And I've taken that $60,000 and I've invested it. So used earlier, Tate, an example of a whatever, 10 to 13%, you know, note fund or something, very consistently, predictably getting that cash back. So what I'll do is I'll take that return cash flow that I'm getting off my investment, and I'll use that to flow back towards my loan. And that way I'm paying the interest and hopefully more, you know, a little bit towards the principal as well. And as I do that, then I'm paying simple interest on my loan, but my cash value stayed there and is going to continue to grow on a compounding basis. So in some of our webinars, we'll use an example, even using the exact same interest rate. If I'm paying 5 and I'm earning 5, but over time I'm paying simple but earning compound, I'll just earn a lot more in just pure dollars and cents than what I'm paying.
Yeah. Can I break this down a little bit? Just real quick.
Please. We want to make sure that we foot stomp on this.
This is a big deal, guys. If you're listening to this, this is kind of awesome. Okay. So you have that $80,000 in there and you say it's going to earn 5% right? It's going to stay in there. And again, we're not making any guarantees of what your life insurance policy is going to make. I can't stress that enough. $80,000, 5%. That's $4,000 of annual income that's going to go into your policy, right? And I would imagine that $80,000 is now an $84,000, which then increases your value of your death benefit. I know this isn't about the value of the death benefit, but you can't ignore that. I mean, now you have this death benefit thing that's hanging over your head in case something terrible happens to you. So that is a big thing. And I know we're trying to minimize that to maximize the tax efficiency. I don't want to get into that. So $4,000 a year on the 80K, you borrow $60,000 and the life insurance says, well, you got to pay us
5%.
Yeah. Okay. 5%.
Let's just say 5% and leave it exactly the same.
Yeah. So that's $3,000 a year. So you're going to make $4,000 a year and borrow and pay $3,000 a year. So what I'm hearing is that you're actually still making $1,000 a year.
Well, the key is that the next year you're making 5% on the $84,000, but you're still only paying interest on the $60,000, right? So
that's right.
The compounding starts to, you know, exponentially grow, whereas you're paying simple interest on whatever outstanding loan you have. So, and that's the key. And you know, a lot of people get confused when they look at these policies because there's these really complex projections, a lot of numbers, and people start going, this is confusing. It looks like smoke and mirrors. I don't trust it. But it really is just simple mathematics if you can sit with it for long enough to really understand how they work.
Yeah. I mean, and then you take that $60,000 and you do a syndication. I mean, you can do whatever you want with it. It doesn't have to be a syndication. Right. You go buy a rental property, right? You go buy a rental property that's a short-term rental.
There you go. Take a huge tax loss.
We're going to glue all this together, right? So then you go buy your short-term rental property, right? And then you get the depreciation. You save $100,000 on your taxes. Now you're making back $50,000. Through your W-2, right? You're not paying taxes on that. And when we were at the happy hour in Houston, by the way, there was a pilot who literally pulled up his tax return and was like, I listened to your show. I saved $100,000 on my taxable income at Southwest last year, right? And here's what I did. I literally did what you told me to, you know, not what you told us to do, but what we talk about on the show. And so like, now you've got the money and the life insurance working for you so you can go buy the rental and get the tax breaks on the real estate. And then you get the tax breaks on the real estate, lower your income. Now you have a bunch of savings. You go do a syndication that then spits off even more depreciation that now offsets distributions that come in from your syndication.
There you go.
Now you're not paying a lot of taxes, right? And so that's when the flywheel starts to spin. And oh, by the way, like you're planning for the future because you still have that cash, that death benefit. I know that's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. $1 million it paid out at time of death is a lot of money.
So you're talking about the flywheels. The cash comes back in, and I want to talk about where to put it, right? Because we were talking before the show, Ryan, about pros and cons of paying down your life insurance loan. You know, you want to pay down that HELOC. You want to pay down any high interest debt. But what about life insurance, Rod? How important is it that if someone gets, you know, they use their life insurance loan to go invest, and then that investment starts generating cash flow, or generates a return, how important is it that they direct those funds back into the life insurance policy, or they just say, I'll get to it later?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'm going to speak personally. All the money that I want to get into my investments, I want to get through my life insurance policy because of the benefits, right? So now, whether it's working income or whether it's a liquidity event from an investment I already have, I want to get it back into the policy. So now, specifically in this example, I took the $60,000 loan to make the investment. I now have an outstanding loan. I've been keeping up with the interest, right? Maybe I was getting a 5% distribution off of that short term for 3 years or something. And then they refi and I get my money back or something, right? So now I have the $60,000 in my hands. What am I going to do with it? Obvious thing might be, well, just pay off the loan, right? Well, maybe. And I say maybe because when I put new money into my policy, every time I put new money into the policy, the cash value goes up, right? I think of it as my bucket got bigger. Now I have more money that's growing and earning, right? And so personally, when I get those kinds of situations, I'm looking and saying, did I max fund what I could have put in this year already? So if it was $100,000 a year situation where I'm able to put in up to $100,000 a year, if I've already put the $100,000 a year in, it's going to be different. But let's just say I haven't. I'll say I've only put in 25 so far or something, right? Then that 60 for me, I'm going to put that towards kind of this new money going in to the policy, because that makes my bucket get bigger. And you're thinking, well, but you still have the $60,000 loan sitting there. What are you going to do with that? Well, I'm going to go invest in something else, create more cash flow. And what we tend to see is that eventually people actually outgrow their policies, meaning between the money they're putting in from their working income and the money they're putting in from the proceeds of their investments, the snowball begins to grow. And if I'm putting $100,000 in now per year now, because that was what made sense for me at the time I set the policy up, pretty soon I'm outgrowing that. Putting it as much as I can in, paying down the loan. Well, now what do I do with the rest of my money? Right. That's more often the situation we see.
You just dropped a lot of terms. I just want to make sure we're all following along. Simple interest, right? So like your home mortgage is like 30 years, right? 30-year principal and interest, or it's 15 years principal and interest. Simple interest means the loan never reduces at principal. So if you take out that $60,000 cash value loan and you're paying simple interest on that loan, guess what? The $60,000 balance stays there. You're just purely paying the interest, right? Like a home loan, if it's a 30-year loan, you're paying amortization. So a little bit of the balance is reduced every month. And then you're also paying interest. So simple interest can go on. So you're not paying. So what Rod is saying is like, hey, should I be trying to chip away at that $60,000 loan by overfunding the loan as I make returns on what I've invested in outside of the policy? And he's saying potentially not, because you could just take the extra cash that you get and just contribute that to your life insurance policy and make it bigger, right? So that you have a bigger bucket. And what he means by that is you have a bigger cash value that you can then pull from in the future, and you're making the policy stronger and stronger. And what we haven't talked about is additional contributions to your whole life policy every year. Like I personally put thousands, if not tens of thousands, of additional cash in my whole life insurance policy every single year to continue to grow it. And again, the subsequent years after your initial funding is more efficient, more of that money becomes accessible, less feed, et cetera. And so that is just one way to kind of look at it. I just wanted to say it a little bit differently in the way that I understand it.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think I'll tack on to that by just saying, you know, if you haven't listened to these previous episodes, you don't really know how this works, somebody might be saying, well, what do you mean they outgrow the policy? Can't you just continue putting more money in? And actually, no, when they're set up, there's going to be a limit to how much you can contribute annually. And so what Rod is saying is that if you set it up so that the, you know, let's say the highest amount that you can put in per year is 100,000, eventually that snowball grows to where you're like, well, I want to put 200,000 in. And they're going to say, no, you can't. But the good news is you can just layer on another policy.
Right. Yep. That's what we see most often. And we'll see it. So for some people, it's like, oh man, 6 months in, I'm ready to stack another policy here. For others, it takes years. But the point is that it's totally personalized. We build the initial policy based on where you are today and what makes sense in terms of your ability to set that money aside. And when we set it up, so we're talking about kind of this max 100,000 in that situation, I usually talk about it in terms of a funding range. So the minimum on that is probably going to be right around 2025 as a minimum, up to 100,000 a year as a maximum. So that's would be the range based on that as your maximum.
So you're setting a target limit on the contribution, but you're also setting a floor of $20,000 to $25,000 a year that you would have to contribute. So can we kind of unpack that a little bit? Because it seems like you're obligating yourself to this, and you've got to make sure that you've got the money in the future to actually be able to fund an annual contribution. Like, let's talk about,
yes, don't bite off more than you can chew.
Also, what happens if you don't contribute?
Right. Yeah, for sure. So at least in the early years, when I'm getting started and I don't have a lot of money in my cash value, I need to plan on paying at least that minimum. So yes, I'm obligating myself for a minimum of, you know, 2 to 3 years to make sure I'm hitting that minimum. Having said that, as I'm putting more in, because the goal is not to hit the minimum, the goal is to hit the maximum wherever possible. So I do put the 100,000 in, I have the 80 sitting there. I took the $60,000 loan, but I still have 20 that's liquid, uncollateralized. Well, if the next year comes around and I don't have the minimum to pay, or I need to buy myself some time, I'll have it in 6 months, but I don't have it today. Well, I can use the money that I have in the policy to back myself up, right? And so year by year, as that value continues to grow, I have more and more cushion that I'm naturally building for myself, so that that feeling of obligation kind of goes away as I've built more value inside of the policy.
Once you start learning more about these, it's incredible how flexible they are, because, you know, I put $60,000 a year in, so $5,000 a month goes into to a current policy. I can contribute as little as, I think, $1,400 a month and not let the policy lapse. And of course, all of the stuff that I've overfunded from the previous year can be used as cushion, like you're saying. So there's a lot of flexibility. You just got to make sure that you are committed to this strategy for the long term. It's not something that you want to commit to for a year or two and then walk away from. You know, it is a snowball. It's a flywheel. So you have to, you know, spend the time to understand it. Go back, listen to these previous episodes, get your head wrapped around this. And once you're comfortable with it, commit to it. If you're going to commit to it, commit to it for the long term.
Agreed.
Rod, what are some of the top questions you get asked when you jump on a call with pilots?
Yeah, well, one of them is this concern, because we just talked a minute ago about, well, I'm obligating myself to a minimum payment. And the question often comes, well, what if I get furloughed or whatever, right? Different things can happen. Yeah,
break my leg.
Pilots feel somewhat fragile as it relates to the expectation on kind of their job expectations, right? So that becomes part of the conversation. And so we talk about this funding range, and my goal might be, again, using the $100,000 example, my goal might be to put $100,000 a year away. But if I'm not comfortable with that 20-25 as the minimum, then it's not the right funding range for me. I need to make an adjustment, right? At least in those initial years, until I can get to a place where I can feel more comfortable. And like you said, there is a lot of flexibility. The 20 can be broken up into monthly chunks. That, you know, there are different things we can do in the moment. But the point is that we just want to make sure everybody is totally comfortable going in, that no matter what happens, that we're not, you know, putting them in a bad spot where the intention was to put you in a much better spot.
Right. Excellent. Well, Rod, we appreciate you coming on, sharing your wisdom. This has been fantastic. You know, I have to say, from personal experience and from feedback that I've heard from a lot of our listeners, we appreciate how pragmatic you are about this. If anybody wants to get hyped on the concept, you can go back, listen to episode 107. There are other people in the space that are a little bit more excited and a little bit more hypey about the concept. It's the same concepts that we're talking about here, but really we do appreciate how yourself, Money Insights, and all the team members at your firm are just very straightforward and pragmatic about the math behind this, and you make it very easy to follow along, and you've been great coaches for ourselves and for our listeners. So thank you for that.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you guys have been great. I mean, I've got nothing but good feedback from our pilot community. And we've been working with you guys for now, what, over two years now. So, you know, if anybody wants to look into this or schedule a call with you, how do they kind of just get in and kind of start getting into the details with you, Rod?
Yeah, so we put a landing page together. So if you go to moneyinsightsgroup.com/pilots, pilots plural, then you'll see there's a webinar that we recorded with Tate that's there. Get into, you'll hear some of the same things we talked about today, but with visuals and you know, expanding on that a little bit. And there's also a spot there where you can schedule a time to meet with myself or one of our team. I'll tell you what, we take a very educational approach to this, because for a lot of people, it is new and it's somewhat foreign to this idea of using life insurance in the way we're describing. And so we want to make sure that you get a chance to get all your questions answered and personalize the conversation to you and your situation and kind of your financials. And so that's really our aim. If you schedule a meeting, we're just going to learn a little bit about you and give you a chance to ask your questions, and then we can send some follow-up info and that kind of thing.
That's so critical. I mean, I don't want to guess at how many times that you talk to a pilot, but like I would imagine 2, 3, 4, or 5 calls is not uncommon to really get a layout of their strategy and kind of their specific situation. So don't feel like you're spending too much time with Rod or whatever it is. This is a big decision and you should make sure you have it laid out correctly. And I think that education piece is why we work so well with you guys.
Absolutely.
Is because you're going to take the time to educate our pilot community on what plan might be the best for them. So that's great.
Yeah. And we try to put a lot of resources out there that you can absorb on your own time. Right. And then so making those conversations even more impactful.
Well, and speaking of episodes 47, 70, and 84, go back, check them out. We've got a webinar that we also hosted on the Passive Income Pilots Facebook page. So if you scroll down, you should see that somewhere there. Rod, once again, appreciate your help and your wisdom, and always a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Rod.